We're going to pick up in our study of the apostolic age. We'll finish that today, and we'll talk about recap Peter. We'll talk about Paul and his missionary journeys, and we'll finish with the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. Next week we will begin a class on the persecution of the early church, starting around 100. Really starts and picks up around 70 AD. Then there was a time of peace, and then it picks back up again after the turn of that first and second century. So last week we talked about Peter, and as we know that Jesus had given the commission at the end of Matthew, and where does Christ tell all the apostles to go, and the rest of those who were following it? Probably wasn't just the 12, but where were they supposed to go?
Everywhere,
go into all nations. Okay, but he says before that, Karen, where are they supposed to go? Go to Jerusalem, tarry here, stay here for a while until you receive power from on high with the Holy Spirit. That happens. But let's look at Acts. And whenever we're in Jerusalem, they've tarried there for a little while, as Dwayne said. And then people start to come to Jerusalem. For what purpose? What are all the Jews coming in for?
Passover.
The Passover. Larry, you with me here in Acts chapter 2? I'm looking for the spot where it says that... okay. Would you read chapter 2, verses 8 through 13?
And how hear we every man in our own tongue, wherein we are born? Parthians and Medes and Elamites, the dwellers in Mesopotamia, and in Judea and Cappadocia, and Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, and Egypt and parts of Libya, about Cyrene, and strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes, Cretes and Arabians, we could hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of God. And they were all amazed and were in doubt, saying one to another, what meaneth this? Others mocking said, these men are full of new wine.
All right, thank you. So where do you think I'm going with in reading these passages? Jesus told the apostles to spread the gospel to all nations. What a fantastic opportunity to have all the nations come to them all at one time. So if we look at the globe, I may have a little bit broader picture. Look at some of the areas on the map there that Larry read. We've got Parthians, Mede, Elamites, Mesopotamians, those from Judea, Cappadocia up north, Pontus, Asia, further up north and up east, Phrygia, Pamphylia. Those were two of the major areas that you can see in the red that Paul traveled through in many of his journeys. Egypt, Libya, Cyrene, they came from Rome, Cretans, and Arabs. They came from all over pretty much the known world at that time to Jerusalem. All kinds of people. And it wasn't just Jews. A lot of these people were Greek people. What a great opportunity to begin to spread the gospel, because all these people were going to start to go back home eventually. So Peter gave that sermon, and he was speaking there, as we had recorded that Larry read. And Peter spends the bulk of the book of Acts in the beginning working with the Jews, correct? And then we have the transition, and we have Paul taking off the rest of his time and spending that time first to the Jew, but then to the Gentile. Who's the author of Acts, most likely?
Luke.
And Luke was a Jew, correct? Anybody have any ideas as to when the book of Acts was probably written?
In the 60s.
All right, most people put it right around the mid-60s, written by Luke. My question is, if this is the day of Pentecost, what happened in all this time here whenever, before the book of Acts was recorded by Luke, the Jew? What was Luke doing? What was Matthew doing? What was James doing? What were all these apostles doing? We touched on this a little bit last week. Most likely, The majority of the apostles probably stuck around Jerusalem proper. We find Paul, as he's writing in the book of Acts and as he's traveling over these years, I mean, we're talking about a quarter of a century in here until Acts is written and recorded down. But during that time, we find Paul traveling through all the different areas and giving his lessons. So why do you think, and how does he begin? The former account I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus both began to do and teach. Theophilus, the name means a lover of God. Really, it's a Greek name. So he's writing this, but who do you think Luke is writing the book of Acts to? Huh?
An individual named Theophilus.
Possibly. He pens it that way. It could be any Christian that loves God. I want to propose something else. That I think that maybe Luke, when he wrote the book of Acts, in his mind he thought, yes, it's good to record some of these things that Paul's did and his work with the Gentiles, but maybe I can stimulate and help encourage some of the rest of the apostles to go out into the world as well. Because I think that they kind of stuck around Jerusalem until this time. And I think Paul or Luke uses Acts several times to say, yes, the Gentiles are also approved by God and have been given the Holy Spirit. And you guys, the rest of us here in Jerusalem, we have the authority. We need to get out and we need to spread the gospel to all places. Bill.
I have a note in my Bible that says that Luke was a Gentile, the only author that was a non-Jew.
Okay. I'd never heard that.
Why would Jesus choose a Gentile to be an apostle?
Well, Luke wasn't an apostle. Luke wasn't an apostle.
No, he wasn't. But I always had considered, and I hadn't seen anything else, unless I've just skipped over. Any other thoughts about Luke being
I didn't want to try to throw a monkey wrench in here, but I just wondered if anybody else had a note to that effect or read in a commentary.
I don't really have many notes in this Bible. It's pretty sparse, but... regardless, if he was a Jew or Gentile, I always thought that he was a Jew. I think that there's also precedent in here for Luke writing this to say, we've got to spread the word to the Gentiles because there's been a lot happen in that time. We find Paul coming back down to Jerusalem many times. We found the Council of Jerusalem in 50 AD where there was the issue or the debate over the circumcision, and Paul and Barnabas came down and were with that, and Peter made his ruling with the rest of the 12 that, hey, all these Gentiles are accepted into the church as well. All right. I do want to move on. That's all I kind of wanted to hit on Peter. And he stayed in Jerusalem. Now, Peter did spend some time in Rome. We find that in the dispersion, we have Thomas... some of the early church writings, we find Thomas going up into Asia. We find Peter spending time in Rome. We find some of them going down to Egypt, and John spending some time in Asia as well from some of those early historians like Eusebius. What we're going to focus on, though, the rest of the time this morning is Paul. I'll scoot back a little bit so I can run some of this. We're not going to go full in depth on Paul's early life. We all know that he was from Cilicia, the island, and he had both citizenship, dual citizenship, which worked out great for the spread of the church. He persecuted the church heavily in the beginning, saying that you shouldn't be following Christ, you should be following the law of Moses and going in house to house and dragging people off. And the people laid their clothes down at the feet of a man named Saul at the death of Stephen, at his stoning. And then we find his conversion. And where did that take place?
The ninth chapter of Acts.
Ninth chapter of Acts on the road to Damascus. You see it northeast of the Dead Sea here on the map. So he's headed to Damascus. He has his conversion. And this is where Paul starts several of his missionary journeys. He goes back to Damascus and he leaves from there. So he's converted, he stays with Ananias in Damascus, he tarries there for a little while, and then he leaves, and he goes down to Egypt, and then he comes back up, and he spends a few years in Damascus before his first journey. We find record of that not only in the New Testament gospel, we find it in Galatians chapter 2, where he stayed and saw Peter there. We also have it in Clement, Ignatius, and Polycarp, talking about Paul and his early works. So I want to begin here, and these dates are as close as I could get them. I've looked at several sources. Looked at several sources. They may be off slightly, but I think they're pretty close. The first missionary journey, and I've got the map up so that you can kind of follow along with me, begins with Paul. And who else? Who does he take with him?
Barnabas
and someone else. John Mark takes with him. And they set out from Antioch, which is in that same area. That's in Acts chapter 13. And this journey started after 44 AD. And then we find it ending in Acts chapter 14, verse 28. It said, after a long time. I believe that that long time was probably 2 years, 45 to 47 AD in that first journey. So you can see where he leaves. He goes down to Cyprus. He comes up, goes to Lystra, Iconium, Derbe, and then he turns around and backtracks and returns back to Antioch. Whenever they return back to Antioch, which is in Syria, Paul and Barnabas stay there a long time, and the dates can be found by counting backwards. If you look at Galatians chapter 2 and Acts chapter 15, we find that this is under the reign of Claudius Caesar. And he said that he'd been there during the drought, and if you work back on time, that's kind of how I've got some of these dates. Like I said, we're not going to go into those too terribly in depth, but he returns. And then in 51 is when I put him starting his second missionary journey. It's a big one. As you can see there, beginning in Damascus, again at the far right of the map, he goes north into Antioch, crosses through the mountain pass, goes up. He wants to go to Asia, but the Spirit forbids him, so he kind of curves around it, goes up by the sea, and then makes his treks along there. What are some of the big things that happened during his second missionary journey? Well, he stopped in Philippi, and who did he come in contact with in Philippi? The Philippian jailer, correct. Also, God opened the heart of Lydia at that place. Then he makes his first trip to Corinth. You can see Corinth is down in the green in Achaia. He spends a year and a half in Corinth. That's his first stop there. So he's gathering information, and this is stuff that he's using to write his letter to the Corinthians much later on. Spends a year and a half there, probably been in from 52 to 53. Who did he meet living in Corinth? Aquila and Priscilla. Very good, Dwayne. He meets them there, and then most people think that Paul wrote two of his first books, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, when he was in Corinth for the first time. Some people put Galatians at the very beginning. I'm not quite for sure, but most people agree that 1st and 2nd Thessalonians was written in Corinth during that first missionary journey. After Paul leaves Corinth, he leaves somebody there, I think. Who had been traveling with him in his second trip? Anybody remember? Silas. Timothy spent a little bit of time with him as well at the very beginning of the trip as he's going through Galatia and Pamphylia. Then we kind of drop him off in the record. And then in Corinth, that's kind of where we lose the trail with Silas with him. So I think he probably left Silas. He crosses by boat and he leaves with Aquila and Priscilla to Centuria across the Aegean Sea. And that is later, as they're coming into Ephesus, where they would meet up with Apollos. Planted, watered, and God gave the increase. I believe he leaves all of them there and travels by himself back down to Caesarea, down back in the Judea area, where he will stay for quite some time before beginning his third missionary journey. Any thoughts or comments on the second journey? Eddie?
This is kind of crazy, but how do you suppose they traveled across land?
I would say probably mules or donkeys, something of that nature. Possibly camels. I bet they did a lot of walking. You know, as we look at what was Paul like in the flesh, most people believe that he had poor eyesight, that he was short stature, most likely bald. That's coming from some historical writings in the 3rd century, though, so we don't really know. Some people also say that he was kind of bow-legged. I kind of get the impression that he looked a little bit like Shorty Preston, kind of a tough, gritty guy that wasn't afraid to go anywhere. He had some health issues. We don't know exactly what they were, but I'm sure his body wasn't in the greatest shape. He got stoned and beaten, and they thought that he was dead at one place. So he had a tough, hard life. I don't think that he was a weakling by any means. If he could travel this much by boat, by land, get beaten, get ridiculed,
shipwrecked,
get bitten by a snake, I think that God had a hand in his health and kept him healthy and kept him as a fighter and a champion for the church there in the beginning. Okay, so let's start our third missionary journey. I've got this starting in 54 AD and it lasting for 4 years to 58. A similar trip again. He's in Antioch. He goes through, makes his another trip back to Corinth, sails on back. Some things that happened during that time. He stays in Ephesus for 3 years. He disputed daily in the school of Tyrannus for 2 of those years, and all the people who dwell in Asia heard him. He sent Timothy and Erastus ahead into Macedonia, but he stayed in Asia for a season. Probably he wrote his first letter to the Corinthians while he was staying in Ephesus at that time. Let's see. He makes mention in 1 Corinthians, in Acts 19 that he foresaw a travel route for the next 4 years, and that agrees with later on in his letter to the Corinthians where a great door was opened to Paul and many adversaries there in verse 9 were with him. He rejoins Timothy when 2 Corinthians was written, and then he makes a third trip. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, it says that he spent 14 years during this time when he started till the end. We find the third journey on his way back. He stops in Troas on his sail back, and that's where Eutychus falls out of the window. And then finally, he ends in Jerusalem. I've got it ending in 58. And what happened when he got to Jerusalem?
He had made a vow.
Okay.
And so he went to the temple to fulfill that vow.
Okay. And so what happened whenever Paul got back to the temple and he makes this vow and he starts preaching and proclaiming all of the good stories that he's had from across the world? How do you think that the Pharisees and Sadducees felt about that?
They were waiting to arrest him.
They arrested him. And he was in prison for 2 years, and they took him up to Caesarea, up north of the Dead Sea, Caesarea Philippi. Following his arrest in Jerusalem, he had an escort in response to the Jews wanting to kill him. Claudius Lysias was the emperor at that time, and the Roman governor was Felix. We find that in Acts chapter 23. He was allowed to have an audience because he was a Roman at that time, and he was kept in Herod's praetorium. We find the story of Felix, Festus, and Herod Agrippa II during his imprisonment in Caesarea. After that, where does he get shipped off to? Correct.
And they ship him to Rome.
That's right. I'm a Roman citizen. And so he got sent off to Rome. And then we have his next trip. And we know, as we said, that they had problems in sailing. It wasn't a smooth sail. They had to stop at several different places. At Crete first, we find of Publius in that area. He goes down and they stop in Malta. He's bitten by the snake. finally makes his way up to Rome under Nero at this time.
It took 2 years.
It took more than 2 years. The travel overseas took about that much time. But he stayed in Rome from the time that the journey started till the time that it was done in Rome. I had 63 to 67, about 5 years total. Because while he was in Rome, he was there on house arrest, but he was enjoying the company of people from all over coming to him to hear him preach. And I think it's while he's in Rome that he writes several more of his books. Titus, probably, 1 and 2 Timothy, maybe not necessarily in that order, but I think he writes a few more books while he's in Rome.
It's kind of an insignificant fact, but there's a probability that he was released during that time and went and made a trip back and then was imprisoned again before he was...
That's what most historians think. I'm not for sure what to think, but there's a lot of people that say that after he was released from his Rome imprisonment, that he traveled quite a bit. And he makes the claim that he would like to go to the far west, which most people believe far west part of the Roman Empire was Spain, because there were Jews that had been exiled or had fled to Spain. And many people think that he was able to make that journey that he wanted to make earlier, and that he traveled to quite a few places during that time. Clement of Rome is one of those writers that said that he felt that he did go to Spain. Now, there's a Clement that's listed in the Bible, too, that Paul makes reference of. I don't think it's the same Clement that we have recorded in history as is the writer. I think it's a different man, but some people say it's the same one.
The Bible itself doesn't say anything about
it. It doesn't. But he had quite a bit of freedom and flexibility while he was there. So, and then he was eventually brought back to Rome, and most people think that he was martyred about the same time as Peter under the reign of Nero, right around 68 to 69 A.D.
So was he imprisoned again or not necessarily?
If he left, he probably came back, and then the persecution intensified. In 64 AD is when Rome burned and the persecution intensified greatly. That's whenever Nero said, I don't want any Christians around Rome, and we find Aquila and Priscilla leaving Rome and heading over to the other side of the sea. So there's some timing things that we can pick up on that, but if he was allowed to leave, he came back. The persecution intensified pretty heavily from 64 on to the time of his death. Many people believe that there in Rome, in front of one of their large temples, that they had a a pit dug into solid stone that went down. And then it had a floor, and then it went down again, and there was a small window above it where there was a stone that they could roll over. In normal historical times, they call it Mamertine, and they thought that Paul was probably thrown down into that pit like many Christians were. Their bodies, it was so deep, there was no way out, that the bodies just decayed and rotted down there, and that the fumes of it was enough to kill a man, that a lot of historians record. Many people believe that Paul was thrown down into there for quite some time, and that eventually on his way out of the city he was led out and he was beheaded on the Ostian Way at the fountain of the Road of Three Fountains.
Where do you think he was at when he wrote that? I think it's in Timothy where he says, I fought a good fight, I've kept the faith.
So it's 2 Peter, I think, is probably Paul's last book where he's basically saying, I'm poured out, my race is fought. It's probably written while he's in Rome shortly before he dies.
2 Timothy.
Okay, thank you, Dwayne. Peter's not up there, but it should be. I don't know why I got cut off. I still think Peter was one of, or not Peter, yeah, 2 Timothy. Peter wrote Peter.
Yeah.
I apologize.
I'm going to go back to Luke.
Okay.
Because that kind of started, and I thought I'd remember him being said he was a Gentile.
Okay.
Easton's Bible Dictionary says that he was an evangelist. I think we agree with that. And that he was a Gentile.
Okay.
And we notice in the opening verse of the Gospel of Luke, he said, you know, I'm here, I'm going to tell you about all these things that happened that I've heard from other people who were eyewitnesses. So Luke was not an eyewitness of Jesus.
I'll do some more study and reading on that. And
his name, Lucas, I think, was a Gentile name. You know, I don't see it as being something that's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know that we can really substantiate it either. But, you know, him following along with Paul as he went to all these Gentile places might have been a benefit.
I'll do a little bit more studying on that, and would encourage everybody else to do some looking, and we can bring that up next week. I do want to get us, we've just got about 10 minutes here. I do want to get us, so most people believe that here's 64 AD, this is when Rome burned, and Nero was in power, and the persecution intensified greatly. In 66 AD, the Jews revolted against the Romans pretty heavily and tried to gain back some of their independence in Judea and Jerusalem proper. You can imagine that did not go over well by the Romans. And so what do you think Nero did about it? Nero didn't like it at all. And so he sent one of his most able generals, Vespasian, down to take care of the matters in Jerusalem and put those rebels in their place. Vespasian goes down to Judea. He's able to maintain some oppression upon the Jews. But during that time, we find a big change in the Roman Empire. So here's Vespasian's down in Judea. In 69, Nero commits suicide. And Titus finds out that the Senate wants him to be the new emperor. So, obviously, he leaves Jerusalem in a hurry, and he leaves his son Titus in place to deal with the Jews. So, in late 69, Titus encircles the city of Jerusalem. And he uses Josephus, the Jewish defect, and the historian that we have much of this writing from, to try to negotiate with the Jews to get them to surrender the city so that Rome can come in, occupy it, and allow the Jews to live there under Roman occupation and under a Roman system. The Jews don't want to have anything to do with it. They would rather die than change their culture, change their traditions, and be Romanized, Hellenized. No, not Hellenized, that's Greek. Romanized, I guess, is the best term. There's two attempts at negotiation from Josephus. Both of them fail. In 15 days, the Romans break through the first wall of Jerusalem, and there's three walls. It takes another 8 days to break through the second wall. And then they get held up at the third wall, which is around the temple proper in the heaviest part of the city. It's too thick. It's 75 feet tall, and it's about 15 feet wide. There's still remnants of the stones today. Some of you have probably been there and seen the size of some of those stones that were hewn for the wall in Jerusalem. So Romans cannot break through it. So since they can't go through it, what do you think they tried to do?
Go over it.
They built siege towers that were also 75 feet tall. They said that they cut down every tree within a 10-mile radius of Jerusalem to build siege towers with which to get it above the walls and shoot down into them. So they built these towers, but they also built a platform leading up to Jerusalem that would put their siege towers a little bit above the walls so that they could shoot down. It worked out great for a little while. They were gaining some ground. But then the Jews started using their brains. What do you think that they did to try to destroy these siege towers? They set them on fire. They would do that quite a bit, but they also did one other thing that eventually led to the demise of the city. They dug tunnels under the walls and supported them with wooden beams and wooden structures, kind of like you'd think of a miner's cavern going back. And they dug under that platform and under some of those towers. They filled it with pitch and straw and a lot of timber, and they lit it on fire. And when it burned, it collapsed and everything fell down on it. And it basically, the siege towers that were built on top of those collapsed and fell as well. Titus was furious that they couldn't get in and destroy the Jews. This was about in the sixth month. So he decided, let's build a wall around the entire city. And some sources say it was in 3 days. I find that highly unlikely. But in a short period of time, they built a wall all around Jerusalem to keep people from getting out and back in. And he said, we're going to starve them out. We're going to let people come in at the beginning for Passover, so the city will be flooded with all kinds of people. But we're not going to let anybody out, and we're not going to let any food in. They're going to starve themselves. And it worked. And it worked.
We need to remember, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, that when we're talking about Jerusalem and the Jews, most of these Jews were wicked people. These were not members of the church that God had already allowed to escape. And so when we're talking about the Romans destroying Jerusalem and the Jews, it's not, there's probably very few members of the church.
I would agree with that. So I think most of the faithful Christians left Jerusalem between 66 and 70 AD. There was opportunity to leave there, and I think many of them left. And a lot of the people that stayed were Jews clinging on to the Mosaical law, the radicals, the zealots that were living there. And I don't think that there were quite as many Christians there as there were Jews.
I think historians talk about that Christians understood what was going to happen and got away, and most of them believed that probably no Christians were really faithful Christians.
Yeah. So Matthew 24 talks a lot about the destruction of Jerusalem and the end of times. And a lot of Christians probably at that time were thinking of the words of Christ. And when they see the abomination of desolation, whether that was Titus or Rome or the statue of Nero being placed in their temple, and if they attributed it to that or not, I'm not for sure. But I think many of them recognized that Rome's coming in, we better leave.
Wasn't there seemed like there was prophecy saying that there would be a relaxation of the occupation of Jerusalem, enough period for the Christians to leave.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
I can't remember the passage that you're thinking of. I can... I'll remember it after I'm done here. But there were, when the Jews initially fought off the Romans in 66, the Romans pulled back quite a bit, and there was opportunity. Whether that was prophetic fulfillment or not, I'm not for sure, but it provided a great opportunity. For what it's worth, I threw down some thoughts on potential dates of writing of New Testament scriptures. Obviously, many of these are by Paul himself, and then some of the others. That's some of my best guesses. Some of them may be off a little bit. Like I said, Galatians, I didn't know if I should put at the top or about halfway down. I couldn't find a clear indication there. Okay, we've just got a few more minutes. Any other thoughts or comments on Paul's time?
When the Jews got on Masada, was that during that same...
This is right here. So there was 1.1 million Jews that were killed in Jerusalem, and 970,000 that were carried off captive. Many of them built the Colosseums that they would die in later on. There was, 70 tons of gold taken out of the temple. So when they finally did break through, because they dug the tunnels under the wall, the walls kind of collapsed, and that allowed Rome to come through some of the openings in the walls. They went in and immediately came to the temple as quickly as possible. And one of the soldiers of the Roman army threw a flaming torch into the temple, and it caught fire in the temple, according to Josephus. Now, Josephus says that Titus was furious because they wanted to save the temple, because Herod had enlarged it and made it look so nice. So he went in there and they tried to put it out, but they couldn't put it out. It was too late. So they brought some of the articles, as much as they could, the gold and silver, out. Did they bring the Ark of the Covenant? I don't know. It may have burned up and been covered up and destroyed during that fire. But then After they leave and take all these people back to Rome, there's still some of these rebels that flee to Masada, which is, I want to say, around 1,500 feet above sea level. It's one of the highest places in the area, and there was the fortress up there. Actually, it was a steeper cliff that looked more like that, and the Romans built a ramp to get up into it, and by the time that they finally got up there, they killed all themselves the night before. Most of these people were the Maccabees. We talked about a couple weeks ago that followed after Matthias, which was the Hasmonean dynasty. Before you get to the Herodian dynasty, there was still a sect of them holding on to the old law. So that was pretty much it for Rome, for Jerusalem by the Romans. So that gets us to about 70 AD. Next week we're going to talk about the persecution in the first century, talk a little bit about John, his exile, and his writings as well. After that, any other questions?